It's really a great pleasure to bring on Grant Cameron again. I value him as a friend, and I respect him as his work, and as a man, and an individual. And I always think of Grant because not every UFO researcher, not every guest that I've ever had, has taken the time to drop by my little town in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and come by and have lunch with me down at the club lunch. And Grant did that one day. We had a lot of fun, Grant.
Yeah, we were kind of popular there in the restaurant, were we?
Everybody stopped. We noticed we were talking along about the CIA and secrets and things like that, and we looked around and the customers, everybody's gathered around. We should have charged admission.
Yeah, we could add a little show there, eh?
Yeah.
A live show.
So I'm going to talk to you about some very interesting things tonight about the 40s and 50s,
yeah,
and beyond about UFOs, and the reason for that is I think it's important people understand that many of the same issues we have today with the media and with people involved in the media, and they get trapped into the UFO story and they end up getting fired and everything else. I mean, that was happening back then too. And
so I
want to get into that, but before we even get to that, tell everybody what Grant's up to these days. I know you went on a cruise.
Yeah, it's actually been quite a kind of busy, and it looks like it's going to be a pretty busy year ahead. I just got back from Philadelphia to an event called The Gathering. I don't know if you heard anything about it, but a guy in Philadelphia, Larry Frascella, got together a bunch of people that he sort of was listening to in the UFO community, brought them into Philadelphia, and we just basically for a day and a half just sort of, he didn't really have any agenda or anything, he just sat there and everybody just talked, and so I got to meet a number of very interesting people, and of course some researchers that I knew from before, but I just got back from that, and we did the cruise as part of that to Nassau, Bahamas, but that wasn't all that interesting because that's not UFO related. Once I got back to the UFO stuff, then I was sort of in my element, but I did that, and I just got my invitation today for Steve Bassett's event in Washington, where he's going to do the citizens hearings. I don't know if you know anything about
that.
No,
tell me about that.
Well, basically what Steve has done is he's gotten funding, $1 million funding, and what he's going to do is sort of a similar to the Greer event in 2001, the disclosure event that Stephen Greer did. What Steve has done is he's basically, since 1996, has been pushing for Congress, for the government to do something about UFOs. And now that he's got this this funding, what he's going to do is, he said, his slogan is sort of like, if Congress won't do their job, the people will. And what he's doing is he's bringing in all the top witnesses that he can find, all the top people to make the case, and what he's got is five ex-congressmen and senators who are going to sit on a panel. And these witnesses are going to go for 5 days. He's going to run for 5 days and present testimony.
When will this be?
This will be April the 29th to May the 3rd in Washington, and at the Press Club. And I'm one of the people that's invited. Most of the major witnesses that you've seen in these past events in Washington will be there. And of course, you know, in UFOs there's a lot of politics, so it'll depend whose camp, who's in, whatever. But he's going for the best witnesses he can. And I'm one of the people that'll be presenting. He's going to have different panels. Like, I guess he'll have, like, military panel, you know, government panel, different panels of witnesses running for 5 days. And then every evening, he's got the people that are coming in are going to do presentations. I don't know how many, four or five presentations a night. This is all going to be broadcast live on the Internet, the whole event, all 5 days, day, evening. And he's also going to have translation, the same as they had when they were in Spain. They were going to have translation for foreign people coming in. And so this is all being set up right now, and he set out the invitation to the witnesses. And I don't know who he's got for senators and congressmen, the ex-senators and ex-congressmen. And basically, this panel will be there, and it should be pretty interesting. He's been pushing, and I saw him in Philadelphia a couple weeks back, and I said to him, it's like playing baseball, Steve. I mean, you keep swinging the bat, and sooner or later, he hit a home run, and it looks like Steve Bassett may have hit a home run on this one. So we'll see what happens. It's just starting up now. He'll probably be approaching you. I think the 3 months before, he's going to do all the PR stuff. So he'll probably be contacting you, and you can do an interview with him and get the details of who's all coming and how it's shaking out.
Yeah, this sounds like a great project. Do you know the five former congressman?
No, I talked to him at the airport. I had a long conversation with him at the airport, and he just mentioned he didn't seem to be too worried about that. That was my main thing, was who would you actually get? Now, there are a few people that, you know, Kucinich might be. I'm sure he's going to talk to Kucinich. He's probably going to talk to, I can't remember the guy. He's a Republican who was against Hillary Clinton. He was fighting with Hillary Clinton. He went to Stephen Bassett. I remember he asked Stephen Bassett for all the material. And I think Steve knows who all these people are. There's been a number of senators and congressmen. In fact, I wrote an article on my website that sort of detailed who these guys are. There's a number of these guys who have, in the background, who have come out and tried to get the information and have been sitting in the background watching this kind of stuff. So the people who aren't in Congress now really don't have any sort of vested interest, but who have powerful names. So I guess you'd have to ask Steve, but he didn't seem to be too worried. I asked him the same question as to who he's going to have on the panel. So we'll see what happens there. And then he wanted sort of a moderator type person to run the thing, and he wanted equal number of Democrats and the Republicans. So he seemed to be pretty confident when I talked to him about this whole thing, and it does look like he's got the funding. So this thing's ready, and there's going to be a documentary done, and he's talking about a potential 10-part TV series made out of this this whole event that's taking place at the I think it's April 29th to May the 3rd, the Monday to Friday.
Great, and I'm glad you told us about it here on the Jerry Pippin Show tonight. This is not necessarily exclusive, but not many people know about it.
Yeah, people wouldn't. I know he's been talking about it for a while. I think he even has a website. If you go to the Paradigm Research, I think he actually has a website. It's not detailed in terms of who's all coming and what's happening, but they basically set up the premise of what this was. And I give him credit. I mean, I've known Steve for a lot of years, and when I first put up my presidential UFO website, he was one of the first people who came and actually, you know, tried to promote me and promote my work. And I know what he's gone through. I know that this guy had he inherited a lot of money. He basically has spent every dime he's got and a lot of money that he doesn't have in order to promote this. He has sold on this issue and has sort of put his life on hold since 1996 to do this. So I'm very happy for him if this thing works out, that he's gone through a lot of pain and put a lot of effort into this, and it looks like he may finally have gotten lucky.
Yeah, when we switched from being a syndicated show to own this little local station in Muskogee and on the Internet, when the Internet was just starting, and, you know, a lot of people were reluctant to go on. They didn't think it would be a big enough audience, but Steve Bassett was one of the first people to come right on.
Yeah.
He's always been a big booster. By the way, folks, if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, you can call 888-919-2355. It's toll-free. And make a statement or talk to Quinn. I mean, we're just going to have kind of a freewheeling little discussion tonight. We have some interesting sound bites we're going to play as well. 888-919-2355. You also can Twitter or Facebook us. We are under a handicap tonight as far as getting everything firsthand, so it's relayed to us tonight. We were in the process of building a new studio. We thought we'd have it done tonight, and we don't. And so as a consequence, part of that doesn't work and part of it does, but we're on the air, and that's what's important. And Grant, in for this occasion, really, You spent a couple hundred bucks on a nice little headset there. You sound very good, Grant.
Well, I'm glad. I always get sort of upset. You know, you go on the air and it's sort of like, oh, now the Skype doesn't work again. You figure, like, you know, I'm going to eliminate all the problems, and then if something happens, well, then you can live with it. But it's always like, well, is it the headset? Is it the computer? It's like, you know, you want to try to get your message across, and it's kind of annoying when it doesn't. So I figured let's go with the best and see what happens. And I guess,
you know, I've been reading some of your articles, and you're absolutely right about penny-wise and dollar-foolish sometimes, all of us. That's one reason we decided to update our studio. We advertise with the Adventures in 21st Century Broadcasting. Well, we need to sound like it, and we will, yeah, starting next week. And our regular web pages, we've always been known for good audio and good, interesting background music and things like that.
Yeah.
And I've been looking at your website for years, of course, but you spend a lot of time and a lot of effort on these things. And I just wanted to commend you personally here on the air publicly for doing a great job. And you know, you'd bound to have had some valleys in this this journey, but you'd never know about reading your information and your articles.
Well, thanks. It's sort of, I was doing an interview, I can't remember who it was with, about, when I got in, as you know, I got into this consciousness thing, and they were asking about whether I'd been abducted. And one of the characteristics of people who have been abducted is they have this sort of driven mission to do something. And I said, well, no, as far as I know, there was one event that might have been related, but I don't have any memories or anything like that, but I sure do have the sort of the drive that it sort of,
yeah,
like dominates my life. It's really all I sort of think about. In fact, I could have worked a number more years, but I just couldn't wait. I figured, well, okay, now I've got enough money, I think I can make it. Let's pack it in and let's try to do this full time and see what we can actually do. So I've got a little bit of an advantage in that this is basically my job. This is what I do. And so I spend the time, and I've sort of learned a little bit, I guess, from Steve Bassett, where, you know, if that's your main thing, you just throw the money at it and you hope that it works out. And if it doesn't, I've seen Steve live with almost nothing for a number of years. And I saw him, I said to him, you actually look pretty good. I mean, you look pretty fit. And he told me about the diet he was on and stuff. But I figured, well, he's doing pretty good. He's actually looking better than I am. And I figured, well, you know, he's got nothing. And so I've sort of given up on the sort of the niceties of life and stuff, and just tried to give as much as I can to this, figuring that I've always, as I've said numerous times, I've been very honored to have been a part of this. To me, this is like, you know, being a part of the time when the Constitution was signed in the United States, or the time when Jesus lived. It, for people who know what's going on, you and I, we realize the significance of this. We realize that this is going to be a big story when it finally does break. And to have been a part of it, to me, is always, I've always been honored to be a part of this thing. I always say, you know, you could have been born, you know, some untouchable in the slums of Calcutta, you know, living in the junk piles there, just trying to make a living, you know, to be living in America and having an opportunity to be a part of this massive, huge, important story in history, to me is I'm an honor to do it, and so I spend the vast majority of my time just doing this.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for explaining that to the audience. A lot of people take things for granted, and there's always a lot of sacrifices that go along. And one of the inside jokes among the researchers is how much money researchers are making in the UFO business.
It's almost like the thing, if you win the Powerball lottery, what do you do with it? Well, you just keep researching until you run out of money.
You're right. So I urge people to go over there and look at your website. You write an interesting thing. Do you write a daily column? It's almost daily.
Not every day. I'll get into spurts where I'll do a pile of stuff all at one time. And I have a pile of articles. I probably have 15 articles where I sort of get going on the article, and then I get another idea, and I've got at least 15 really good articles where I haven't finished them, where I still, intend to eventually get them up where they're
that reminds me of many shows I'm working on. There's always something more you want to add. You know, you just got to figure out when to do it. I notice you broadened your subject matter a little bit. I mean, you wrote a column a couple of days ago. I read about, I guess for lack of a better term, it was philosophical about atheism and UFOs. And remember that column?
It just sort of struck me, and it was, you know, it's just something where, again, it sort of gets me sidetracked. Like, I'm doing the what we originally going to talk about was this Eisenhower thing, and it was going to be a three-part article. Well, I've got the first two parts up. I still haven't got the third part up because I get sidetracked. I got sidetracked by the Obama thing, and then I, with disclosure, and then this atheism thing. And it was kind of almost ties into this thing about how we don't really see things in perspective in ufology. I was just jogging, and I'm listening to this show of a guy who does a show on consciousness, and there was an atheist guy on there, and he's talking about the theory of evolution, the random theory of evolution rather than the theistic evolution theory, but the random theory of evolution, and he was complaining, this atheist guy, and he's complaining about the fact that only 16% of people in the United States believe it. And I'm thinking, my goodness gracious, I mean, this is taught in school, and I'm thinking, you know, in ufology, we're always sort of whining about, you know, nobody listens to us, and we're not getting the message across. And so I, of course, immediately went and checked the figures, and, you know, we've got 48% of people believe that in the United States that extraterrestrials have visited the Earth. We've got, you know, way more people than that who believe that, you know, 66% of people believe that there's life in outer space. And here's these people who actually can get this taught in school, the theory of evolution, and only 16% of people believe it. And we've got three times as many people. So it's like our UFO message is actually doing much better than some of the other messages that you would think are doing better than ours.
Yeah. It's a very interesting article. I urge people to go over there and read it. You mentioned your Eisenhower series. And I was looking at part two for a while today, and alien encounters that you discussed with Eisenhower, rumored to have done out there at Edwards Air Force Base. Only at the time, it was not Edwards Air Force Base. It was called Moroc. Is that right?
Right. It was. Yeah. It was before all the name changes thing took place, and it occurred in February of 1954. And the reason I was looking into that is the other thing I sort of got into was this whole nuclear connection, that if you take a look at the presidents of the United States, and I'm still working on the book, and so for the book Presidents and UFOs, I was looking at the early presidents, trying to say, you know, look, is there an earlier chapter, is there a first introductory chapter about presidents back in the, 17th and 18th centuries and stuff like that. And basically what I found out was that there really are no stories about UFOs, extraterrestrials, any of that kind of stuff in the early presidents. There really is nothing. There's nothing until Roosevelt, until then, and then suddenly all these stories appear, and there's UFOs, and there's president stories tied in with them. And presidents are very carefully documented, whether you're talking back in Jefferson's day or Lincoln or Washington. All their material is very carefully, their writings are maintained, and people listen to what they're saying. And so I sort of looked at the fact that UFOs, based upon the president's encounters with UFOs, is a modern-day phenomenon. There are no stories of UFOs and presidents in ancient past. So I started to look at this connection with nuclear weapons. And one of the big theories in ufology is that when we detonated the first atomic bomb, that's when the UFOs appeared in mass. And that's when the presidents of the United States started to have to deal with it. And if you take a look at history, that seems to be the case. So the way I got into the Eisenhower thing was to sort of tie in the nuclear thing, and I suddenly realized that Eisenhower had these multiple encounters, and they're, you know, the stories may be made up, or you can't prove them 100% one way or the other, but that each of these encounters involved a nuclear event. And then I found a major one in the Truman administration that also involved a tie-in to nuclear weapons. And so I started to look at that, and that's how I got the Eisenhower article, where I was looking at the one sighting that he had and the four rumored encounters that he had with aliens and the nuclear connection. So the part one and two are up, and the main one that everybody seems to know about is the 1954 one at Muroc, which is now known as Edwards Air Force Base.
Right, where he supposedly was at the dentist in Palm Springs at the time.
Yeah, he's about 100 miles away by airplane from
did you say that Eisenhower had a sighting?
Eisenhower had a sighting in 1952. This was published in the New York Post. This is going back about 10 years ago. There's no name attributed to it, but the New York Post did put the sighting up. And the tie-in there, he was on the USS Roosevelt as part of a NATO operation which involved 1,000 ships and hundreds of planes, and it was a big, huge NATO operation. And the nuclear connection was that the USS Roosevelt was the first aircraft carrier that was armed with nuclear weapons. And they had them on the ship starting in 1950, and in 52, Eisenhower had this rumored sighting on the USS Roosevelt as part of this operation. And if you go, and it's on my website, if you go there, it's back a few articles. You got to go back a few articles, maybe about a month ago. There's actually a number of articles that have been written about the number of sightings that took place from the USS Roosevelt in the 1950s. And so when Eisenhower was on the ship in 1952, when supposedly this thing was flying around, and Eisenhower walked up on the deck, and the guy who reported it said Eisenhower was there, and Eisenhower looked up, saw this object, and he said, I better go and check up on this. You better not say anything about what you saw. And Eisenhower goes down. And so here you have this sighting, which, again, you can't prove one way or the other, but you have this sort of bizarre nuclear connection. And so that's what I was doing with the Eisenhower thing, is when you take a look at all these encounters, they all have this bizarre nuclear connection to them, which may tie into the UFO thing, that a lot of the nuclear UFO story is nuclear related.
You and I have talked about that a lot, and I've come to the same conclusion you have, that there's definitely a nuclear element to this, when all of a sudden they decided to start showing up and watching us, you know?
Yeah, in fact, there's, part two, there's a bizarre, and David Rudiak, I found this on his website, there's an actual, we'll talk about this tracking of these two satellites, but there's a letter that David Rudiak has on his website from 1949, and this is from White Sands in New Mexico, where they did a lot of the rocket testing, and where they had this tracking station, where they were tracking, they were looking to see if the Russians were going to put up a satellite, because they detonated their first atomic bomb, and they were working on the hydrogen bomb, so they knew that the Soviets were working on space technology, and so they had this tracking station to try to track Soviets to see if they were putting up a satellite, which they didn't do till 1957. But anyway, they had this site, and this article, this letter that Rudiak has, is the guy that was running White Sands at the time talking about Tomba, who was the guy who discovered the planet Pluto, talking about him watching Mars. And this is in this 1949.
Yeah, we're going to play a little bit of an excerpt of that in a little bit. I mean, evidently they're tracking two mysterious satellites here.
Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, this letter is important because it's long before any missiles go up or anything like this, and it's this tracking station, and Tomba is working there, and also was at Keller was also there. And they were doing the green fireball thing. This was all going out of this New Mexico thing. They were doing this testing. But in there, it talks about Tomba watching Mars, and he's telling people, you know, that when we detonated the first atomic bomb in whenever it was July of 1945, that Mars was very, very close to us, and that to Mars, when the atomic bomb went off, it would have been like a neon light lighting up the side of the Earth. And so you see Tomba in 1949, according to this letter, where he basically believed, yes, there was life on Mars, and they were watching us, and there was this thing where he tells in 54, where he's telling people to learn how to determine the height and the elevation of objects that they see, because they believe that in 52, 54, Mars is going to be very close, and there's going to be a lot of UFO sightings. So here's this very prominent astronomer in the early 1950s basically telling people that there's a tie between UFOs and the nuclear weapons and Mars, and anticipating that Mars is watching us in our nuclear development. And so that was a very interesting 1949, long before anything happened. But what happened in this Eisenhower story was that they set up a radar. U.S. Air Force set up a major radar there to try to track if the Russians were putting up satellites. And in the fall of 1953, they picked up two satellites in Earth orbit, and they called them satellites. And this story started to break all over the place. The first sort of major place that broke was Major Keyhoe, and I think you've got an audio clip that.
Yeah, I got it. In fact, this might be a good place to play that here right now. He talks about something else as well. But let's play that soundbite, and then let's get back to what Major Keyhoe was saying, okay?
Okay.
Joe, if we can play the Keyhoe soundbite right now, let's do that.
There are three very important developments which have been kept from the public. In the first place, there is at least one, and possibly two, artificial satellites circling the Earth at the present time. An intensive effort is being made by government authorities to place plans in Mexico to locate and track the courses of these satellites, in an effort to determine what they are and where they came from. Secondly, within the last 2 weeks, Canadian government scientists have notified all official star watchers to be especially alert and to report immediately any unidentified aerial objects. The third development, which has been kept secret, is this. In the closing week of March, Air Force Secretary Talbot made two trips to Palm Springs, California in an Air Force plane. On one of those trips, shortly after the plane was passed Fresno, California, the crew of Secretary Talbot's plane discovered that it was being powered by a large, silvery, disc-shaped object, which was flying about 1,000 feet below the Secretary's plane and about 1,000 feet distant. The unidentified object was seen by Secretary Talbot, the crew of his plane, and Secretary Talbot's aide who accompanied him on the trip. After watching the disc for several minutes, Secretary Talbot ordered his plane to swing around and approach it. The object immediately accelerated and disappeared at high speed. This was a daylight sighting of long duration by credible personnel and under very favorable conditions. In view of the tremendous amount of evidence that is being concealed by Air Force secrecy, it is high time the American people demanded to know the facts.
Okay, Major Keyhole talks about two things, Grant Cameron. The satellites and the rest of it, you might bring me up to date on what it actually is talking about here.
Okay, the significance of this is that this tape took place in May of 1954. They discovered the satellites in the fall of 1953. This is the first indication, public indication, that they have the satellites, and that is Keyhoe goes with Frank Edwards, who is the sort of the big broadcast, one of the big three broadcasters.
We're going to get into a lot about Frank Edwards here in a minute, but you just.
Okay.
Because I didn't remember him, but he was in the top three of the news and commentators.
Yeah,
he was over there on the Mutual Broadcasting System, and which was kind of a junior network, but he was right behind Edward R. Murrow on the ratings.
Yeah, and so he's talking to Keyhoe in May of 1954, and Keyhoe mentions the fact that the U.S. Air Force has detected one and possibly two satellites, and that the Canadians knew about it, and we knew about this in Canada, that Wilbur Smith had picked up on this, and he knew that these two satellites were there because of another reason we'll get into in a minute, but he was letting people in Canada know to look for these two satellites that were determined to be going around the Earth. And the other thing that's interesting in this interview with Keyhoe is that Keyhoe mentions the fact that the Air Force Secretary has had a UFO sighting. And this happened in March of 1954. And the significant part of it is Eisenhower's sighting took place, his event took place, he was in Palm Springs in February of 1954. The Air Force Secretary has a direct UFO encounter in his plane with his crew in March of 1954, about a couple weeks after Eisenhower has his encounter at Edwards Air Force Base, and he's coming out of Palm Springs. So it's exactly the same place in the country where the Air Force Secretary has this sighting, almost as if the aliens are sort of sending a message to the Air Force that they're there and pay attention. So that's the significance of this. And then what happens is, this happens in May of 1954. Then in August of 1954, the prominent Aviation Week in Space Technology picks up on the story, and they print the story, the fact that the Air Force in New Mexico has tracked these two satellites, and they add part to the story, and they basically say that it's been confirmed that they're not artificial, that they're natural satellites, which is significant because, as we'll talk about later, the Air Force manages to kill this. Like Roswell, they kill this story, and until now, nobody knows about this story about the two satellites. It's very significant. I worked on it. David Rudiak's worked on it. But this story basically has been killed. It went away. And the significant part about the fact that the government confer, or their story was that they're natural satellites, is that if they're natural satellites, they are similar to the moon. Once you get into an orbit around the Earth, it's not like the thing can just turn around and fly away. It's there forever. And they determined these satellites were at 400 miles. One was at 400 miles out. One was at 600 miles out. And that's about double or triple. The space station is at 220 miles. So these were at 400 and 600 miles, and the Air Force was tracking these objects. And
do you think they're still there?
Well, this is the thing. They're not there anymore. I mean, otherwise somebody would have detected these satellites. And so the whole idea that they were natural satellites that have been captured by the Earth's magnetic field is it was a cover story, because they aren't there anymore.
So in any words, it just is somewhat like maybe a couple of the satellites of Saturn are false or man-made. And same thing about Mars, perhaps.
Yeah, so they've got more than one. So they and what the story gets bigger and bigger when you get into it. It's so you have this happening, this story starting to break, and a couple days after Aviation Week in Space Technology runs the story, the New York Times, which was a bit more independent than it is now, basically ran with the story as well.